Good afternoon. I'm Mary Lou Leary, and I'm with the Office of Justice Programs at the United States Department of Justice. And it is such an honor to welcome each and every one of you and to be here with the Attorney General and with Vice President Biden to honor you and the work that you've done and the sacrifices that you've made. I want to thank my colleague, Denise O'Donnell, who's sitting right up here in the front. She's the director of the Bureau of Justice Assistance, and they administer the Medal of Valor program. Also, to welcome Congressman Cartwright, Director Samuels from BOP, Acting Director of the ATF, Todd Jones, who's a Minnesotan with an officer here to be honored. And all the other special guests, and particularly family members. Thank you so much for joining us. And finally, thank you to the Medal of Valor Review Board members who've worked so hard to make this day happen. We're here to recognize 18 extraordinary individuals for their quick thinking, their selflessness, and their exceptional courage. They're law enforcement officers, corrections officers, firefighters, who went way beyond the call of duty to risk, and in some cases, to give their lives for their fellow citizens and for their colleagues. As a reflection of the sacrifices that they're called upon to make, four of our recipients are being honored posthumously. Sergeant Thomas Bettinger, Deputy Cameron Justice, Trooper Joshua Miller, and Deputy William Stiltner. And today, we all pay tribute to their memory. And now, it's my pleasure to introduce our next speaker, the nation's very top law enforcement officer. As a career prosecutor, Eric Holder has worked very closely with public safety officers at the local and the federal level. I'll never forget working with him at the U.S. Attorney's Office in D.C. when he was the U.S. Attorney, meeting with the families of fallen officers, going to the funerals, sitting down with the children. This is a man who knows in his heart the sacrifice that law enforcement officers make, and firefighters as well. He is a true friend to the law enforcement community and does everything he can to give them the resources that they need to get their job done. So join me, please, in welcoming the Attorney General, Eric Holder.
Thank you, Mary Lee. Well, good afternoon. Thank you, Mary Lee, for those very kind words, and thank you for your outstanding leadership of the Office of Justice Programs and for your dedication to supporting public safety officers throughout our great nation. It is a pleasure to be with all of you here today and a privilege to join Vice President Biden and so many distinguished public servants, including Congressman Matthew Cartwright, the Director of the Bureau of Prisons, Charles Samuels, the Acting Director, soon to be Director of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives, Todd Jones, and the Director of the Bureau of Justice Assistance, Denise O'Donnell, in paying tribute to this year's recipients of the Medal of Valor. Now, this is truly an extraordinary occasion. I am grateful for the opportunity to acknowledge and to personally thank each of our honorees and take note of their service to the American people for their bravery in the face of great dangers and for all that they've sacrificed in the name of public and community safety. I'd like to extend a special welcome to the colleagues, the friends, the invited guests, and the proud family members who have traveled from across the country to salute these really remarkable men and women. And I'd like to thank you for all that you've done to support those who we've gathered to honor and to make their achievements possible. Now, it's a privilege to share this moment with you as we celebrate the work of these really inspiring public servants and present them with one of our nation's most prestigious recognitions. Today's award recipients have distinguished themselves by going above and beyond the call of duty. And they now join the ranks of a select group of police officers and firefighters, sheriffs and EMTs, rescue squad members and highway patrolmen who have earned this accolade and who really elevate America's finest traditions of public service every day. From our biggest cities to our smallest towns, The people that we honor today stand on the front lines of the struggles against crime, terrorism, and threats to our most vulnerable communities. These Medal of Valor recipients have fearlessly responded to desperate cries for help and have courageously risked their own lives to secure innocent victims, protect fellow officers, and to end deadly assaults. Now, some entered a burning building without hesitation and without the protection of a fire hose to rescue an infant that was trapped inside. Another took quick and decisive action to subdue an armed and violent inmate plotting an escape from prison. And one of our awardees caught fire in brave temperatures over 1,000 degrees while carrying a victim to safety. Now, through these selfless acts and through the service that you render to your communities and fellow citizens every day, each of you has earned the deepest thanks of a grateful nation. And all of you have incurred a debt of gratitude that this country can only hope to repay. So while no words can really fully capture the courage that you have demonstrated, I believe you now join a cadre of heroes whose actions will always be remembered. And it is my sincere hope that your Medal of Valor will stand as a timeless tribute to your achievements and a symbol of the tradition of excellence that each of you exemplify. And of course, even as we celebrate the conduct and the contributions that define this remarkable group of public safety officers, we have to be mindful of the fact that serious challenges and urgent threats remain before us. Just as this ceremony provides a chance to lift up the stories of our heroes, it also reminds us just how difficult and how demanding your jobs can be. But that's why, as I look around this crowd, I can't help but feel confident about where your efforts will lead us from here. So once again, on behalf of my colleagues across the Department of Justice, I want to thank you for all that you do. I'm proud to count you as partners in the work that remains our shared responsibility, and I congratulate you on this well-deserved honor. Now it is my privilege to introduce one of our country's most principled leaders, a tireless advocate for public safety officers everywhere, and a very good friend of mine, whose lifelong service and commitment to our nation are an inspiration to all of us. So ladies and gentlemen, I would ask you to welcome the Vice President of the United States, Joe Biden. And the Vice President is on his way. So now this is Eric, Phil. Phil, please have a seat. Okay. But truly, this is something that I've done with the Vice President over the last few years. And there are a lot of ceremonies that we do. But I have to say that, there are... all are meaningful in some way, but some are more meaningful. And when you look at the summaries of what you all have done in order to be here in Washington, D.C. today, and you look at the fact that your names were chosen from a larger group of people who did truly extraordinary things, you really have you really get a sense of what your contributions were like and the bravery that you showed. It's truly remarkable. When I think about, as I was reading this one last night, the notion of 1,000 degrees, personal on fire in 1,000. Who was that, by the way? That's pretty hot, right? That's like hotter than Washington in the summer. I mean, you think about those kinds of fact situations and remaining focused on what the mission is and then, saving people's lives, it's truly, truly amazing. So I want to thank you all again for all that you do. And now, once again, it is my privilege to introduce a good friend and a person who stands with all of us all of the time, Vice President of the United States, Joe Biden.
Hello, folks. Thank you. Thank you, General. I appreciate the introduction, and I want to begin by thanking everyone present here, and particularly I understand that both Paige Badinger and Angela Miller are here. And I want you to know my heart goes out to you. We unfortunately have a shared experience. I've lost a spouse and lost a daughter, and I know this is an incredibly bittersweet moment for you because on every one of these occasions, you relive the moment you got the call, and you got a lot more courage than I had some years ago. But one of the things you'll find is that the talk about firefighters and police officers being a family, it's real. It's real. You will have every firefighter and every police officer in your community looking out for you and your kids the rest of your life. And that's something special about firefighters and cops. And I mean that sincerely. Duty, honor, courage. These are the common denominators shared by 18 police officers and firefighters being honored here today for posthumously. You all share, and you're all crazy, God love you, you all share a selflessness that's not easily explained, a commitment to your fellow man that's rare, a bravery that inspires, literally inspires almost everyone who hears about it. There's an element of these qualities in every man or woman who pins on a shield, whether it's as a firefighter or as a cop, because being a police officer or a firefighter is not what you do. It's who you are. It's who you are. They asked my wife, they said, well, she's a teacher, she's a professor, and spontaneously the response was, teaching is not what I do. A teacher is who I am. Well, that's in spades for all of you. But there are those among you, and you're sitting with us today, and in our thoughts today, who are exceptional within the exceptional. That's why we're here today, to honor those rare few who have looked certain danger in the face, faced it with incredible valor, and all the while saying, it's my duty, ring it in your head. You know, there's a poem that could be describing each one of you here today, and it goes like this. It says, a person who knows the divine peace of selfless service and a job well done in the name of all men, a person who doesn't preach the brotherhood of mankind, they live it, is a firefighter or a cop. You know, you could face danger every single day, and yet you do it just to keep the rest of us safe. Neighborhood I grew up in, an awful lot of guys became cops or firefighters. In my neighborhood, you became a cop, firefighter, or you learned a trade, or you became a priest. I wouldn't qualify for any of them. But I'm serious. There's something about y'all. You can smell it when you're 10, you're 12, you're 15. And God, we're lucky for it, man. I marvel at what makes them tick. I marvel at what makes them tick. And like all Americans, I truly honor those of you who, those who have laid down their lives like your husbands did for their fellow citizens. What is it that drives someone like Sergeant Tomer Badinger to approach a dark attic with full knowledge that there's a fugitive waiting up there with a weapon? What is it? What is it that pushes a man like Trooper Joshua Miller to think that the safety of a kidnapped 9-year-old child is more important than his own physical safety? To engage the kidnapper even after he'd been wounded, instead of trying to find cover or get treatments for his wounds? What is it? What is it that causes men like Deputy William Stittler and Cameron Justice to answer the call, even when they're at home and off duty? What pushes men like that to run in the hail of bullets, give their lives, their fellow deputies, out of the line of fire? It's hard to define these qualities. I've done many of these over my career. My association with firefighters and police has been as long as I can remember. It's been the essence of my public life. And as many of these things that I do, I still grapple with what makes you do what you do. And just thankful that you do. You can't explain it, but you know it when you see it. I see it in the shield over someone's heart. I see it in the men and women who are sitting here before us today. You're all a different breed. Thank God for you. You're from different backgrounds, but you're the glue that literally binds communities together at times of stress. You're that face that shows up for a woman on the second floor of a burning building just when she thinks it's all over for her. You're the amazing, you know, the amazing thing about all of you is that the very things you do when you're on duty to save people's lives, you do when you're off duty. There's no separation. I've never met a cop I grew up with. I've never met a firefighter that I've known, and I know many, who make any distinction between whether they're on their 8-hour duty or overtime, in uniform, out of uniform, with their shield or not with their shield. Have you ever seen any law enforcement officer or firefighter when something they could do about a crisis that they see at hand, they didn't attempt to do it? In my experience, you're not there for the community only when it comes to your sworn duty. You're also the first ones who show up to volunteer to line the Little League field. You're also the ones who shovel the driveway of your next-door neighbor who's elderly and can't get it done. You're also the people who do the fundraiser for the neighbor who has cancer but doesn't have insurance. You're the very spine of our communities. And for those of you who are family members and parents of some of these guys, you did one hell of a job. Again, it's not the uniform, it's the heart that beats inside that uniform. And I also want to say something to your families. It takes a special kind of man or woman to kiss her husband or her wife goodbye, her son or daughter in the morning as they strap on a sidearm or head off to the fire hall, knowing the uncertainty that faces you. The vast majority are never injured, but every single one of you knows that you have no idea what's going to happen that day as they walk out that door. There's a famous phrase by the poet John Milton. He said, "They also serve who only stand and wait. They also serve who only stand and wait." So it's not just you guys we owe. It's your spouses. It's your mothers. It's your fathers. It's your children. Because every day, little tiny piece of them ticks when they hear on the news there's a shooting downtown. There's a 3 alarm at such and such a place. Every one of them, just for that moment. We owe you a debt we can never repay you, particularly the families of Joshua, Thomas, Cameron, William. You all belong to a fraternity. And as horrible as it is, there'll always be people watching out for you, unlike any other circumstance. Firefighters and cops, like soldiers, leave no one behind. Leave no one behind. And I hope you all gave some comfort from knowing that. You'll always have people standing with you. So I apologize for being so personal, but to me, this is personal. To me, you are, as I said, the spine of the country. You and those thousands of kids who strapped on combat boots and headed off to Afghanistan and Iraq, and some of you did that too. You're the heart, you're the soul, you're the spine of the nation. And the really sad thing is that it takes an extraordinary act for the community to rise up and recognize what you do. Although you know it. You know it. So I want to thank you all on behalf of myself, on behalf of the President, and presumptuous of me to say this, but on behalf of the American people who are safer, feel safer, are more secure, feel more secure in their lives and their homes because of what you all do. In these few words, I obviously haven't been able to pay tribute to the incredible men and women we're honoring today. So now we'd like to do something that, again, is just an attempt to show you how much we appreciate, how much we recognize, how much we need men and women like you to keep this the civil society. So I'd like to introduce Deputy Attorney General to read the citations. Again, from the bottom of my heart, thank you. And on behalf of the President, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you so much. It's powerful, and we're grateful for your words. Most of all, we're grateful for your leadership and for your genuine spirit of appreciation and everything you do to support law enforcement across this country and firefighters and corrections officers. So it's now my honor, deep honor, to confer the medals, and I will read the first citation and then ask the first recipient to come forward over here to receive a medal and a certificate, and then we'll do the same for each of the remaining recipients. In the case of our fallen honorees, I would ask that their family members or agency representatives accepting on their behalf come forward. First, we'll confer the 2009-2010 medals, then the 2010-2011 medals. And the first recipient of the 2009-2010 Medal of Valor is Officer Julie Olson of Maplewood, Minnesota Police Department. And on September 7th, 2009, Officer Olson was called to assist a fellow officer from North St. Paul, Officer Richard Crittenden. Officer Crittenden had answered a call it was a domestic violence call, a woman whose estranged husband had come to her apartment. This woman had an order of protection against the suspect, and the North St. Paul Police Department knew him well. They had dealt with him many times. Officer Olson and Officer Crittenden arrived on the scene at the same moment. They entered the woman's apartment, and Officer Crittenden was immediately attacked by a man who was holding a flaming cloth. Officer Crittenden pushed the residents in the apartment out of the way, and he was struck in the face and the side of the head. And during the struggle that ensued, the suspect grabbed Officer Crittenden's sidearm and fired one round point blank at his head, and he died. The suspect then fired on Officer Olson, shattering her spare magazine and injuring her arm. She returned fire. She struck him several times, and then she backed out of the apartment. She immediately reloaded and re-entered with another officer. They disarmed and handcuffed that suspect, who subsequently died at the scene. Officer Olson, I don't know how you kept your composure under that stress, but bringing an end to a terrible situation. We thank you and congratulate you.
Spot for you? You want us on this side? Okay. That's the Attorney General said.
The next recipient is Officer Rashima Taylor of the Osceola County, Florida Corrections Department. And on June 22, 2009, Officer Taylor was assigned to the medical unit at the county jail. She was confronted there by a high-risk inmate who had taken another officer hostage. The inmate was a gang member. He had a long history of violent felony charges, and he was serving three consecutive life sentences with no possibility of parole. He placed a fully loaded 9mm semi-automatic handgun to Officer Taylor's head, and a struggle broke out. Although the inmate was much larger than Officer Taylor, the officer knocked him to the floor, dislodged the gun, pinned him to the ground, and with one arm around him in a headlock, radioed for assistance with her other hand. Incredibly quick thinking in the face of such imminent danger. And it saved not only her own life, but potentially the lives of many others. We are amazed and so proud to honor you with this medal.
I'm going to try to do this right. You face out there, and I'm going to come behind you and do it, okay?
And next, we honor Wildlife Officer Michael Neal of the Arkansas Fish and Game Commission. May 20th, 2010, Officer Neal answered a call for assistance after two police officers from West Memphis were shot and killed during a traffic stop. The shooting suspects were in a van in a parking lot, and they were using an AK-47 assault rifle and a handgun to fire on Sheriff Dick Busby and Chief Deputy W.A. Wren. When Officer Neal arrived, he used his truck to ram the suspect's van, preventing their escape, and he diverted the suspect's attention away from the sheriff and the deputy. The suspects opened fire on Officer Neal's truck and fired several rounds through the windshield. Officer Neal miraculously avoided being hit, and he opened fire. He disabled the driver and possibly the passenger before putting his truck in reverse and backing out of the line of fire so that other officers could continue the firefight. Both suspects were pronounced dead at the scene. By putting himself in harm's way like that, Officer Neal undoubtedly saved the lives of Sheriff Busby and Deputy Wren, both of whom were injured. Officer Neal, congratulations. Thank you. Next, we honor Officer Sean Holler and Officer Rafael Rivera of the California Highway Patrol. February 25th, 2010, officers from the Fresno County Sheriff's Office were trying to serve a search warrant at a residence in the town of Minkler. As they approached the door, they came under intense gunfire, and one of the deputies was killed. After hearing the call over the radio for shots fired, Officer Haler responded to the scene and exchanged gunfire with that suspect. His fellow officer, Rivera, arrived then and took cover behind Officer Haler's patrol vehicle. And both of them engaged in a gunfight until ceasefire command was given. During a second exchange, another officer was hit. Officer Rivera moved to rescue that fallen officer while still under fire. Meanwhile, Officer Haler broke cover, moved into position to engage the suspect, providing cover for Officer Rivera. Officer Rivera was able then to move the injured officer to a protected position, although sadly, he did not survive his own injuries. And the assailant then committed suicide before the officers were able to enter the house. Both Officer Haler and Officer Rivera placed themselves in immediate and intense danger to save a fellow officer. Just as Vice President Biden said, they never leave anybody behind. We are so grateful for your actions. Officer Haler, would you please come forward? And Officer Rivera, please. The next recipients are Trooper Robert Lombardo and Fallen Trooper Joshua Miller of the Pennsylvania State Police. June 7th, 2009, Troopers Miller and Lombardo joined in the pursuit of a man who had threatened his wife with a gun. Then this guy abducted his 9-year-old son. After a 40-mile chase, Trooper Miller employed a maneuver to bring the suspect's vehicle to a stop. Recognizing that this child was in immediate danger, he and Trooper Lombardo approached the driver's side of the Honda, using their batons to shatter the window. The subject then fired shots from a 9mm handgun. He struck Trooper Lombardo once in the left shoulder and Trooper Miller in the right thigh and the neck. Despite Officer Lombardo's injuries, which paralyzed his left arm, he did not seek cover. He continued to engage the assailant, who died at the scene. The suspect's son was rescued, uninjured. Trooper Miller was flown to Lehigh Valley Hospital in Allentown, where sadly, he was pronounced dead. Trooper Lombardo was treated for his wounds and has since returned to duty. We honor both Trooper Miller and Trooper Lombardo, and we pay a debt of great honor to Trooper Miller for making the ultimate sacrifice. Trooper Lombardo, would you please come forward? Accepting for Trooper Miller is his wife, Angela Miller, one of those brave family members that the Vice President spoke about. Ms. Miller, would you come forward? Small token of appreciation. And now for the 2010-2011 honorees. The first of those is firefighter Peter DeMontro of the New York City Fire Department. August 30th, 2010, firefighter DeMontro and his unit responded to a fire in a four-story brown house. When they arrived, they found the front door and the stairway completely blocked by flames. So instead of waiting for a hose line, firefighter DeMontro climbed an aerial ladder to the third floor window, where he found a man who told him that his friend was trapped inside. He went in and he found this man deep inside the building. As he helped him through the apartment, the entire third floor suddenly just exploded and set both of them aflame. Although he himself was engulfed in flames, this firefighter stuck by the victim and guided him onto the ladder and to safety. Both men were very badly burned. Tests showed later that they were subjected to temperatures of over 1,000 degrees. But they both, thank God, survived, thanks to firefighter DeMontro's quick thinking and mostly his skill and his courage. Congratulations. Now we honor another firefighter, two firefighters, firefighter Hope Scott and Battalion Chief William Reynolds of the Virginia Beach, Virginia Fire Department. On October 12, 2010, firefighter Scott, then Captain Reynolds, and their engine company responded to a fire in Virginia Beach. When they arrived, there were two family members who were on the roof of the porch, and they were trying to find a way to reach a baby and a 73-year-old woman who was the baby's great-grandmother. They were trapped inside, but the heavy smoke and the high heat prevented them from entering. Knowing that time was absolutely of the essence, Captain Reynolds and firefighter Scott entered a second-floor window without a hose. That's a very risky maneuver. The heat was so intense that it rendered the thermal imaging camera ineffective. So they were forced to just crawl blindly through the debris. Firefighter Scott heard a faint cry, and he followed the sound, sweeping the floor with her arms. She found that baby and handed it to Captain Reynolds. That baby made a full recovery, was brought to safety, made a full recovery, and did not suffer any major medical effects. Incredible. Sadly, the baby's great-grandmother later died of her injuries. But by undergoing one of the riskiest maneuvers in firefighting, Captain Reynolds and firefighter Scott demonstrated exceptional bravery and self-sacrifice. Congratulations. I can't imagine how you did that. Thank you. And Battalion Chief Reynolds. Story is more inspiring. The next honoree is Deputy Sheriff Krista McDonald of the Kitsap County, Washington Sheriff's Office. And on January 23, 2011, Deputy McDonald responded as a backup to two of her colleagues. It was a report of an armed man with a missing 13-year-old girl. They found the suspect with a girl, with that girl, outside the store and asked him to identify himself. He refused and tried to run. Deputy McDonald's colleagues gave chase and both were shot. Deputy McDonald then moved toward her downed colleague, even though they were still being fired upon. As the suspect continued firing, she advanced on him without any cover, returned fire, and struck him in the leg. This girl, who was witnessing all of this, ran to the suspect's side. The suspect shot and killed that young girl before he turned the gun on himself. In protecting her fellow officers and doing everything she could to help that girl, Deputy McDonald exhibited extraordinary courage under fire. Thank you. Our next recipients are Officer Timothy McClintock, Officer Max McDonald, Officer Douglas Weaver, Sergeant Carl Lounge Jr., and Fallen Sergeant Thomas Batinger of St. Petersburg, Florida Police Department. January 24, 2011, a federal fugitive task force tracked a violent suspect to his house. Two members of the task force found this suspect in the attic. As they attempted to make an arrest, he pulled out his gun and shot both of them. One of the officers fell through the attic to the floor below. The suspect moved the other fatally wounded officer to an attic opening, trying to lure the fellow officers in. Officer McClintock, already on the scene, crawled to the downed officer on the floor. Even though he was under fire from above, he administered aid, pulled him back. Meanwhile, a rapid response team composed of Sergeant Batinger, Sergeant Lounge, and Officers McDonald and Weaver entered the house to rescue those besieged officers. Sergeant Batinger, a rapid response instructor, led the entry with a ballistic shield. With Sergeant Lounge providing cover, Sergeant Batinger moved under the attic, and that suspect let loose a barrage of gunfire, killing Sergeant Batinger. All of the officers who were engaged in that rescue attempt came under continuous fire. The incident did not end until that fugitive was shot and killed. Under incredibly challenging and dangerous circumstances, confronting an assailant who had the advantage of cover, these five brave men risked their lives to rescue their fellow officers and to bring a fugitive to justice. In doing that, Sergeant Batinger made the ultimate sacrifice. I first ask Officer McClintock to come forward. Officer McDonald. Officer Weaver. Sergeant Lounge. And now accepting for Sergeant Batinger is his wife, Paige Batinger. Would you come forward, please? Final recipients of the 2010-2011 Medal of Valor are Fallen Deputy Cameron Justice and Fallen Deputy William Stiltner of the Buchanan County, Virginia Sheriff's Office. On March 13, 2011, Deputy Stiltner was at home when he heard two fellow officers were shot while responding to a larceny call at a local salvage yard. He, of course, headed to the scene to find a sniper shooting from the woods up above. Under fire, he and a second deputy tried to move the wounded officers to safety. While attempting the rescue, Deputy Stiltner was shot and fatally wounded. Deputy Justice, who was also off duty, arrived to find the officers trapped by a gunman on the ground below. Armed with his M16 rifle, he spotted the sniper in the trees. As Deputy Justice pulled the trigger, the sniper fired, inflicting a mortal wound on Deputy Justice. The sniper was finally shot and killed by other deputies. Deputy Stiltner and Deputy Justice gave their lives for their fellow officers and for their community. Brings new meaning to the word, "I got your back." Accepting their medals is their colleague, Ms. Sharon Thornsbury. Ms. Thornsbury? Thank you. And again, we honor all of our recipients. We owe you so much. And I know I speak for the Vice President and for the Attorney General when I say what a privilege it has been for us to confer these medals. If I could make one more request, we'd like to have the honorees and Director O'Donnell come to the stage for a group photograph. So please, everyone, if you could remain in your seats until those photographs are taken. But if all the honorees would come to the stage, we'd appreciate it.